So did you see Bret Baier interview Kamala Harris last night, huh? Yeah. Kamala did so bad, FEMA gave her $750. Harris did so bad, Jimmy Carter woke up and demanded his vote back.
Oh, welcome everybody to The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 3 minutes after 6 o'clock this Friday morning on The John Carlson Show, Friday, 17th day of October. So nice that you could be with us if you would like to be heard from. Well, that's easy. You can either give us a call or you can send us a text. Give us a call at 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. Outside King County, got 888-312-5757. Did I say October 17th? It's the 18th, isn't it?
Correct.
For heaven's sakes, either we're in a time warp and it's 2021 and young Zach has COVID, is wearing a mask, or he's a little below the weather. What's going on, young Zach?
I just got really comfortable at the DNC, you know, undercover as a communist. I just wanted to relive that again a little bit. Yeah, no, I think I've got the flu.
Oh, dear. Oh, excellent. So thank you for coming here while you've got the flu.
I don't think I have any more.
Anyway, very stoic. Yes, I have. The flu has been going around. Several people I know have gotten it. And, you know, this is very interesting. I used to always get a flu shot. And starting last year, I stopped getting flu shots. I'm not sure it was a smart thing to do, but I just, you can get them for free. In a lot of places.
If you get at the grocery store, you get a little coupon when you do it.
Grocery store, pharmacies, yeah. I mean, there's lots of places that will give you a flu shot for free. I just am hesitant now to get the vax. And of course, I've rejected all COVID, you know, subsequent COVID vaccinations as well. I'm not sure that's a smart idea or a healthy idea. All I know is I didn't used to be a skeptic, but I became one because of what we learned throughout the course of the vaccine protocols with COVID. Plus the fact that I got fully vaxxed and ended up getting COVID twice. That might have something to do with it. Anyway, I don't know if any of you have changed your habits or if any of you have become a little more skeptical or not, but I so far have not gotten a flu shot this year. Boy, is there a lot going on here on The Commute with Carlson. While we were in the last hour of our show, the news came down that it appeared that the Israeli Defense Forces had taken out the president, the head, the lead terrorist of Hamas. His name is Yahya Sinwar. I've been telling you about this guy now for, well, the better part of a year, because Yahya Sinwar was the inspiration, the guiding light, the architect of Hamas's October 7th massacre of Israelis. He's the Bin Laden. As Bin Laden was to 9/11, Yahya Sinwar was to the October 7th killing, the biggest one-day killing of Jews since the Holocaust. And the Israeli Defense Forces went after him and every other leader in Hamas. And it took a year, but yesterday, early yesterday, they got him. And a couple of things you need to know. First, Benjamin Netanyahu is the prime minister, of course, of Israel, and he gave a video statement in Hebrew. He said, Hamas will no longer rule Gaza. This is the beginning of the day after Hamas. This is an opportunity for you, the residents of Gaza, to finally break free from its tyranny. He then went on to address the families of hostages, vowing to return all captives still in the custody of Hamas. There's 101 hostages that they still hold. About a third of them are believed to be dead. Netanyahu went on. He said, Sinwar ruined your life. He told you he was a lion, but in reality, he was hiding in a dark den, and he was killed when he fled in a panic from our soldiers. Ironically, we're now learning, folks, that the Israeli Defense Forces soldiers who killed him reportedly didn't realize it was him until after the fact. His face was covered. He was wearing a military jacket. They tested his DNA and fingerprints before they confirmed that it was him. Netanyahu then went on to give a direct message to the remaining Hamas terrorists. He said all of their leaders would be eliminated like Yahya Sinwar was. He said that those terrorists who hold hostages will be spared by the Israeli military if they surrender their weapons and if they release the hostages. But for anyone who harms the hostages, Netanyahu says, blood will be on his head and a reckoning will be upon you. The defense minister of Israel, Yoav Gallant, issued a similar statement. This is the man who brought disaster and death to the Gaza Strip, the man who made you suffer as a result of his murderous actions. The end of this man has come. It is time to go out. Release the hostages. Raise your hands. Surrender. Sinwar, again, who was kind of like the combination of bin Laden and Sheikh Khalid, who planned, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who planned the 9/11 attack. Remember, bin Laden approved it. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed planned it. Yahya Sinwar planned the massacre, and he got buy-off from Iran. And the plan was that they would do this, and they would attack Israel, but go after soft targets, you know, focus on women and children, treat them terribly, torture and kill them, and then take hostages. And the plan is that when Israel reacted in rage and came after Hamas, that would provoke other supporters of Arab Islamic terrorism. Principally, they wanted Hamas to attack, which they did from the north, firing rockets as the Israeli military headed south. They were firing rockets from the north, and they were hoping to get Iran in a big way. But Iran didn't enter in a big way. They are content to pay for Hamas to attack Israel. They're content to pay and arm Hezbollah to attack them from the north. And they're, you know, happy to pay for other terror groups, the Houthi rebels in Yemen and whatnot, which also attacked Israel while trying to shut down shipping in the Red Sea. But they didn't want to get directly involved because they don't want that fight with Israel. You will note, this is very important, and a lot of the media overlooked this, that none of the Arab Muslim countries surrounding Israel, none of them supported Hamas. Jordan didn't. Saudi Arabia didn't. Iraq didn't. Egypt, south of Israel, did not, because they recognized that Hamas, especially under the leadership of Yahya Sinwar, were psychopaths and barbarians. Here's a quick anecdote. 6 years before, or rather 5 years before the October 7th massacre of the Israeli civilians, Hamas tried to engineer a breach at the Israeli border. Remember, they share a border down at Gaza. They share a border with Israel. That used to be Israeli territory. Israel walked away and allowed Hamas, or allowed the Palestinian Muslims living in Gaza, gave it to them. Said, we're leaving. It's yours to govern. And they chose Hamas to govern them. And Hamas, instead of developing 25 miles of Mediterranean beachfront, instead of doing that, they just used their country as a staging base to make war, perpetual war, whenever possible, on Israel. So back in May of 2018, they tried at multiple points to try and basically rush the border. And a lot of media coverage there. One of the people caught on camera was a lunatic screaming in Arabic for followers of Hamas to cross the border and, quote, tear out the hearts of the Jews, close quote. That lunatic was Yahya Sinwar, who stood out as a crazy man, even surrounded by supporters of the Hamas regime. Now, back then, the Israeli Defense Forces held back the mob, ended up killing several dozen. And then 5.5 years later, when the Israeli Defense Forces had their guard down because Hamas spent 2 years lulling them into thinking that they were no longer a threat, boom, they sprung their October 7th massacre. So now the head of Hamas, Yahya Sinwar, is dead. His predecessor, by the way, was also killed by the Israelis. They killed Yahya Sinwar's predecessor in Iran. They've killed the head of Hezbollah up north, Hassan Nasrallah. And, of course, the exploding pagers and the like. Israel has gained the offensive. They've gained the initiative on both the north and south threats from Hezbollah up north and from Hamas. And keep in mind, this is the important takeaway. The Israeli Defense Forces killed Sinwar in the southern city of Rafah. Why does that matter so much? Because Kamala Harris and Joe Biden told the Israelis not to go into Rafah. Remember that, Kamala Harris? I've examined the maps. I've studied the maps. It's not a good idea to go into Rafah, as if she's a military strategist. They went into Rafah, and the momentum for Israel winning this war picked up exponentially, and they ended up killing Sinwar in the city that the Biden-Harris administration warned the Israelis not to go into, threatened to withhold military aid if they did. The Israelis went in anyway, showed the Biden administration how you win a war. All the Biden administration knows is about war zones. We learned from Afghanistan and the horrendous way they withdrew. Israel's getting the job done. Again, they got Sinwar in spite of the Biden administration, not because of the Biden administration. It's 20 minutes after 6 o'clock. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner. A recovering young Zach firing on all cylinders. The Commute with Carlson. Great having you aboard. Good morning. It's 25 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandervoort III with a social media sweep this morning.
How about FBI crime stats? You sort of got into some of this yesterday on the show, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And the reporting now is that the FBI has quietly revised and updated crime data for 2022.
Yep.
Turns out it was missing thousands of crimes. And Jim Walsh, the state Republican Party chairman, reposted something about this and how the updated stats have now been changed by the FBI. And Walsh writes on his social media account, "This is critical. Why was the FBI sitting on the correct numbers but not putting them out? And if they're now amending these 2022 crime stats, which Democrats were touting as a sign that initially, crime was down when Republicans and Donald Trump were pointing out that various high crime problems in America's big city still existed.
Right.
So does this become another example like the Hunter Biden laptop, the Russia collusion hoax, where the network news, legacy news media, the Democratic Party operatives and officials repeatedly put out reports of a story that now gets exposed and refuted as being bogus?
It's one more reminder. An unhappy reminder of how American institutions that were once above politics are now immersed in politics.
Or that were concerned about presenting accurate information.
The FBI used to do it right. Now, the FBI's methodology is inferior to the National Crime Victims Annual Survey.
Okay.
Because the FBI gives you reported crime data from most places. They leave out a lot of
some jurisdictions
as well
included.
But the National Crime Survey basically is an exhaustive, massive national survey of people. Have you been the victim of crime? And a lot of crime that isn't reported is acknowledged to the survey takers. So that's where you get your real numbers. And those real numbers have shown that violent crime continues to be a huge problem in this country.
Yeah.
And now even the FBI revised its numbers in that direction.
In the wake of the Bret Baier Fox News interview with Vice President Kamala Harris, Reason political news website and magazine posts this comment. Kamala Harris's interview on Fox News is a reminder that an adversarial media gives us information a sycophantic media does not. Right?
So, there you go.
Important context to everything that we're battling here in terms of political campaigns. And then here's a follow-up to a topic you had earlier in the week, and this is the SpaceX launch. And I guess we were talking about it earlier in the week on your show, based on recapturing this rocket at the base where it was launched from, kind of first time that had ever been done. But you were going through a story about an appointed board in California that was talking about denying SpaceX.
No, they didn't talk.
Operational.
They
did it then. Okay.
That the California Coastal Commission is denying SpaceX and the Air Force, because they work in conjunction with the Air Force, permission to use Vandenberg Air Force Base
in Southern California
on the coast for accelerated launch schedules.
Yeah. So the LA Times is reporting that SpaceX is now suing California regulators alleging anti-Musk bias in their rocket rejection. So, and that was the story you were hitting on earlier this week about how this California board is basically blocking Elon Musk and SpaceX.
And, you know, good for him for fighting back. And they didn't even make a pretense that this was rooted in environmental concerns.
Yeah, any sort of environmental protection.
They were releasing statements about how they don't like his politics. They don't like his posts on social media. Well, gee, too bad. What's that got to do with his work in space? So, again, it's just another example of a regulatory body using the power of government to try and violate the rights of other people. All right, it is 6:30. Brian Haywood, the most consequential political figure in Washington State, the man behind the initiatives on the ballot, joins me in a few minutes to respond to Jay Inslee making a savage personal attack on him and his character. You'll hear it coming right back from the as the Commute with Carlson continues, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It's 36 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Got an interesting email from KVI listener Elaine. She said, I listened to your program this morning. I have special questions about the long-term care initiative. Now, what she's referring to is every one of you who is employed, who gets a W-2 at the end of the work year, all of you are being assessed a payroll tax. The legislature passed this into law a couple of years ago, and it was delayed and held back. And then finally, in June of 2023, you started getting taxed at 58 cents for every $100 you earned for a long-term care program you have to pay in for as long as you work. And if you pay into it for less than 10 years, let's say you're in your 50s and you're going to work another 8 years and then retire, you won't get any benefits because you have to pay into it for at least 10 years. And if you do pay into it for all that time, your lifetime benefit, let's say you work for 40 years, your lifetime benefit is $36,000, which lasts several months, and that's it. That's your lifetime benefit. So she writes and says, I have not seen any ads about this initiative from the Let's Go Washington campaign. I am a nurse. I know that the bill covers next to nothing. I'm in my 60s. I want to work as long as I can, but won't get any benefit from what I've paid in. I have paid over $400 to this tax this year alone. I want my money back. I feel if there was an ad that described how people will get little, if anything, from the money taken from our checks, it would do some good. I would love to see an ad that features women who will be screwed over from this tax. What Elaine is referring to here is not only is this a ripoff? It wasn't made. This program wasn't designed to help people with long-term care. The bill was written by the Home Health Care Workers Union. It was written by a union. Here's what will help us, because you need to hire home health care workers. When in its initial iteration, the bill would have denied any benefits to retirees if they move out of state. And of course, half retirees move out of state. So that's how you know that this bill isn't about helping the elderly in their, you know, there's no other state that has a program like this, by the way. This wasn't about helping the elderly in their advancing years. It was all about helping a union. It's very cynical. And that is why Initiative 2124 will allow you to opt out of this program. If you vote yes on Initiative 2124, you no longer have to pay into this program. You can stay in the program if you choose to. In other words, if you do the research and you say, yeah, this looks like a good deal, I think I'll stay in, then stay in. I don't think hardly anyone will, because it's such a bad program. That's why they have to compel you to belong to it. They have to compel you to pay into it. Now, Elaine didn't mention this, but not only is this a ripoff of a lot of working men and women, it is especially unfair to women who have children, because a lot of women will, you know, graduate from school and then they'll get a job and then they'll, you know, fall in love, get married, and here come the children. And at that point, a lot of women decide to take a few years off. Maybe they have two or three kids. And so they decide to, you know, I think I'm just going to stay at home and look after the kids. That's the decision that Lisa and I made, that when Matthew and Drew came a couple of years apart, we would both feel best knowing that in the middle of the afternoon they were at home with mom. So she left the workforce to look after the kids. If you do that and you've paid into the long-term care program, let's say you've paid into it for 5 years, and then you leave the workforce and you're out of the workforce for 5 years, when you re-enter the workforce, everything you've paid into the program no longer counts. If you leave the workforce for more than 5 years, you have to start at zero. That's how this program works, if you want to call it working. It is, again, designed to help the union, not designed to help the worker. So if you're less than 10 years away from retirement, you will pay into this program and you will get nothing from it. If you are working and you leave the workforce for more than 5 years, and then you rejoin the workforce, none of the money that you paid into the account will be there for you. It all goes away, and you have to start at zero. Because that $36,000 maximum benefit, that's the maximum benefit. Many people will get less. Here's something else. If you are working, but you work less than 500 hours a year, you pay into the program, but none of the money counts for you. You have to pay, or you have to work more than 500 hours. There is an ad out there right now by the campaign, the 2124 campaign, that features a young man who suffered from birth defects. He was born with hands but no arms. His hands are attached to his shoulders, and he's made the best of it. You know, got an education, and he works. But because of the severity of his disability, he cannot work more than 500 hours a year. So the state of Washington is forcing this young disabled man to pay 58 cents out of every $100 he earns to the long-term care program. And then, because he doesn't work 500 hours, that money stays in the program, but he doesn't get any of it. So talk about taxation without representation. That's another example of how this program works. And you've seen the ad on TV featuring the middle-aged and senior citizen women complaining that if this program goes away, they will lose their long-term care benefits. None of them have the benefit yet. No one has any long-term care benefit yet. Everyone's just paying into it. So again, here we go with the lies by the anti-initiative forces. They figure that if we raise enough money, we can go ahead and mislead people, and the other side won't have as much money as we have, so just pour it on. But that's what you need to know about this program and how it really works. And by the way, this is the important part. If you want to get rid of the mandate, if you want to choose whether you want to belong to this program, you vote yes on the initiative. You vote yes to pay less. Vote yes, pay less. Vote yes to say no to the mandatory program. So make sure your friends know this. If you don't like this program and you want to pay less, then you vote yes to pay less. You vote for the initiative to strike down the mandate. All right, we were expecting Brian Haywood. He was held up delayed. We are looking forward to getting him on with us later on the program. It's a busy morning, though, with a lot of other stuff going, including Lars Larson right around the corner as the Commute with Carlson continues, 12 minutes to 7 o'clock. Good morning. All right, you got 7 minutes to 7 o'clock. Here's our buddy Lars Larson, our noon to 3 host. How are you, Lars?
Happy First Amendment Friday, Johnny.
Absolutely. I can't get over the fact that Kamala Harris appears on the news hailing the killing of the terrorist Hamas leader, Yahya Sinwar, the head of Hamas, by the Israeli Defense Forces, even though she strongly opposed the operation that resulted in his death.
Isn't that crazy? She tries to have it both ways. For instance, in the interview she did with Brett Baer, she says, he says, do you want to decriminalize crossing the border illegally? And she says, no, I didn't do that as vice president, and I will not do that as president. And yet, as vice president, along with Joe Biden, one of her first actions that she's now referring to, not the Lankford bill anymore, but the one that the administration actually pushed, which would have provided a pathway to citizenship for the 11 million illegals who were already here in 21 when they introduced the bill, and presumably the next 12 or 15 that they allowed in after. Yes. So she isn't providing just decriminalizing. She's proposing that we make them all citizens. And she did so formally in an act. It never got out of committee in either when the House was under Democrat control nor under Republican control. But that's what they proposed, a pathway to citizenship that's actually faster than the timeline it takes for somebody who comes in legally.
Right.
You believe that?
Well, yeah. Can I believe it? Of course I believe it. Because it's very important, Lars, that we bring millions and millions of undocumented Democrats out of the shadows.
Yeah, and they say it's because we need the workers. No, we don't. We have 7 million prime-age males who are not mentally deficient, not physically disabled, who are of working age between 18 and 55, and they need to get off their butts and back to work.
Yeah, and they don't want to work for substandard wages that many illegals do, and that's why you need to enforce labor laws that require people to check citizenship status.
E-verify forever.
E-verify. Got it. Lars Larson, every day of the work week from noon to 3 on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, hour number 2 of the commute right around the corner.
Today in Georgia, Donald Trump sat down for a town hall with an all-female audience. Of course, Kamala also wanted to do a town hall with just women, but her staff couldn't define one. According to a newly revised FBI stats, violent crime in America has actually gone up, not down, as Democrats claim. Kamala Harris is now promising that if elected, she will ban math. Reports say Donald Trump may work at a McDonald's during a campaign stop in PA. Meanwhile, Kamala will also spend a day at a job she's never worked, vice president.
All right. Thank you, Greg Gutfeld.
Thank you.
You're listening to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We were going to have Molly Hemingway join us right now for the program. She's going to be in town a week from today at the Washington Policy Center annual dinner. Her schedule was changed on very short notice. So she said, can I join you guys on Monday? And we said, sure. So Molly Hemingway will be joining us on Monday. Did you guys catch what happened when Maria Cantwell was speaking to the striking Boeing machinist?
Was this at the same get-together where Pramila Jayapal spoke as well? Because I saw some clips of Pramila Jayapal speaking to a crowd of striking Boeing workers.
Yes. And
so I don't know if this is the same event.
No, they both showed up at the Union Hall to speak and support the striking machinists union. And as long as she was bashing Boeing, no problem. But then Maria Cantwell made a mistake. She bashed Donald Trump in front of the machinists, and she didn't get quite the ovation she was expecting.
Our Puget Sound economy depends on it. But I just want to warn these guys of something. Housing everywhere in the United States of America is expensive as all get out. We haven't built enough supply. I was in a key negotiation 5 years ago to get a bipartisan bill that would have built hundreds of thousands, up to a million units by now. But Donald Trump came in and squashed that deal. So even here...
Listen to this crowd. Listen.
Even here, build housing. My point is this.
my point
is this. Everywhere, everywhere in America, we need more affordable housing.
Okay.
We need to
try and get the crowd
the
back.
The housing opportunities. So the best.
Okay. Yeah, these machinists are, you know, you're not talking to a government employee union here, okay? These are men and women who work with their hands. Did you not see the bumper stickers on the cars in the parking lot when you pulled up for your, when the limo pulled up to drop you off there, Maria?
I was going to say, about one block from the Frederickson plant is a gas station that usually has a big setup selling Trump flags and hats and all that sort of stuff. Just, I mean, you can see the Frederickson plant from this stand.
So anyway, that was the reception she got. It was just kind of unexpected. And whenever you hear a politician start saying, the point I'm trying to make here... that's a sign that they're panicking. That's a sign that I stepped in it.
Yeah, well, hopefully all those Boeing machinists are seeing the BS that she's spewing, because she's been at the forefront as a U.S. senator for 20-something years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of all these increases in cost of living, all these increases in taxes that cut into your ability to pay your rent and pay your mortgage?
Phil, more to the point, she supported the Inslee spending agenda, which... sent interest rates soaring because inflation went up.
Yeah, and then she's voted in favor of all these Inflation Reduction Act things.
That didn't reduce inflation.
And all the American Rescue Act things after the COVID lockdowns that she supported that fueled inflation that we've been suffering from.
Yes.
So look in the mirror, Maria.
So Maria Cantwell, you can build all the housing you want. You can double the nation's stock of housing. It's not going to become more affordable until interest rates come down. The purchase price may stop going up. That's the problem. One of the problems is that the purchase price keeps going up. But even if you leveled off the price of housing, even if the price of housing went down a bit, let's say housing prices went down 10%, that'd be great, but not at these interest rates. You know, I've talked to friends who are in their 30s. And they were all getting set to buy a home, and then interest rates went from 3% to 6.5%. And what would have been a $1,500 a month mortgage or a $2,000 a month mortgage became a $4,500 a month mortgage. Unsustainable. They said, we can't afford the monthly nut. I can afford the down payment. We've been saving up for the down payment, but I can no longer afford the mortgage. I know what they're talking about. We've got a line of credit over at our place. You know, we bought some land in Idaho as an investment. Don't worry. I'm not going anywhere. Always have to
add
that. Not going
to Kirby out on us, are you, John?
I'm going to get Kirby on the line. John, you need to come to Texas. A conservative move. Anyway.
Kirby, help you find a deal.
No, no. Thank you, Kirby. I'm fine right here. But as an investment, found some land in Idaho, and we used opened a line of credit. And what do you know? The line of credit monthly payment was just over $300 a month. You know, you feel it, but it's worth it. It's an investment, and the value of the land is hopefully going up. More than the monthly payment. And then, because it was a line of credit that was not locked, it floats with the interest rates, and you had over a dozen, remember that? Over a dozen increases in the interest rates over a 14-month period. That $300 a month payment became a $670 a month payment. And, you know, I'm doing okay financially, but don't think we didn't feel that one. And it's still up high. Well, imagine if you're a young couple and you have saved for your down payment and you have budgeted for, you know, we'll pay more than we are for our apartment, but it's going to be our home. And then you just see that interest rate double. And it doubled, by the way, the line of credit in a year's time, maybe a year and a half. So those interest rates and those monthly mortgage rates doubled in a remarkably short period of time because of the inflation and the rising interest rates that were prompted by all of that massive increase in spending after COVID was in the rearview mirror. See, that was the problem. It was understood that we were, when we shut down the economy, deliberately shut down businesses, that there was going to be some short-term spending to open before businesses could get back on their feet again. Once those businesses were back on their feet, then we should have started ramping down the spending. Biden did the opposite. He ramped it up. And that is the problem we found ourselves with. All right. Do you guys know what the Al Smith dinner is? Does that ring a bell for
this
you?
This is the New York City big charity event fundraiser.
It's a white tie dinner.
That's
not just
part of the theme, right?
Not just black tie.
Yeah. White, yeah.
Very,
very formal.
Very formal, yeah. Very posh.
Everyone wants to dress up and look snappy, right?
And it is held to support Catholic charities throughout the country, particularly in New York. It's held at the Waldorf Astoria, the third Thursday of October, since 1960, when John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon were running against each other for president. It has traditionally been a stop for the presidential candidates. And every time you have seen the Republican and Democratic nominees for president stop by the Al Smith dinner. You know, Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, the first George Bush with Michael Dukakis, et cetera, et cetera. All the way, you know, Barack Obama, Mitt Romney, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, Trump and Biden. And usually what they do is they lighten the mood a little bit. The candidates give funny speeches. You know, they poke fun at themselves and their opponents. It's kind of a roast, and they raise a ton of money, many millions of dollars. This year it was different. This year, Kamala Harris chose not to attend. Instead, she sent a video to the Al Smith dinner. Now, the MC of the dinner is the comedian Jim Gaffigan, who plays on Saturday Night Live. He plays Tim Walz. And so here is how he opened up the program last night.
You know, this event has been referred to as the Catholic Met Gala. 22% of Americans identify as Catholic. Catholics will be a key demographic in every battleground state. I'm sorry, why is Vice President Harris not here? I mean, consider this. This is a room full of Catholics and Jews in New York City. This is a layup for the Democratic nominee.
Instead, she made a video with Molly Shannon playing the old Saturday Night Live character that most people have long forgotten, Mary Catherine Gallagher. And the crowd did not react at all. They just silently watched it. It didn't work. So the night was definitely a dud for her. And Gaffigan's right. For a Democratic candidate, this shouldn't be tough. But the campaign decided, you know, not at the last minute. They actually decided last month they weren't going to attend the dinner. Chuck Schumer did. Chuck Schumer was seated right next to Donald Trump at the podium. And Trump couldn't help but poke a little fun Chuck Schumer's way.
But look on the bright side, Chuck, considering how woke your party has become. If Kamala loses, you still have a chance to become the first woman president.
Not bad. Not bad. When George W. Bush showed up, he said, man, this is a really impressive crowd. The haves and the have-mores. All right. It is 18 and a half minutes after 7 o'clock. The John Carlson Show, Philip J. Vandervoort III, right around the corner with the social media sweep. We've got a lot more coming your way. Steve Moore, you always see him on Fox News. He's going to be joining us 7:35 this morning. Good morning. Well, I know it's 7:23 in the morning, and Philip J. Vandervoort III standing by with the social media sweep. What's going on, Phil?
Politico.com. put out a profile on a story of a black man who has never voted for a Republican president before, but this time around tells Politico he's going to be voting Donald Trump for president. And I think there's some unique, compelling takeaways in this, so I wanted to bring it up with you. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I had seen this Politico story with the headline. It says, some black voters in Georgia see Trump as a real option. Republicans are working to turn out more new Trump voters. Georgia's going to be one of the swing states. The state lined out of Albany, Georgia. It talks about the pews inside a Baptist church where parishioners are. Joseph Parker, 72-year-old man, said he was thrilled about the election, but he pointed to a quarter century earlier when Bill Clinton was campaigning for president and campaigned at his church. He says now, today, he says things were really different then. And Politico writes, that's why this 72-year-old black man in Albany, Georgia, is voting for Donald Trump. He says the first time this 72-year-old has cast a ballot for a Republican presidential candidate. Here are a couple of quotations from Joseph Parker. Quote, Trump's a man of his word. What he says he's going to do, he does. And everything is so high right now. He's talking about grocery prices, clothes, everything, gas. And 4 years ago, it wasn't that high. And so people see the difference in Kamala Harris and Trump, and they want some of what they had 4 years ago. And I do, too, end quote. So that's one of the profiles. But this is the real world sentiment that either the political class or the media acolytes of Kamala Harris don't seem to want to acknowledge.
Well, think of it, Phil. Does today's news media ever acknowledge people like that?
Usually no, right? That gets overlooked, snubbed,
overlooked,
ignored.
Because the media today, particularly national media, has become an elite profession. Mm-hmm. You know, back when the media held much more esteem in the eyes of the American people, media people, for the most part, hailed from working class backgrounds.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that is no longer the case. Yeah. Not only are they college graduates, they usually spent time going to a J school, you know, like Northwestern or Columbia or whatnot.
University of Missouri has a strong journalism school.
And I don't know if it makes them better journalists, but it does make them more out of touch.
Yeah, I think that college environment has probably led to the era of journalists that want to put forth this political viewpoint ahead of reporting on an actual story. The Politico story also talks to a 28-year-old from Marietta named Arthur Buford. The 28-year-old said he decided to vote for the first time this election for Trump Despite his family members still being Democrat all the way, Buford said it's not just him, that he keeps hearing similar remarks from other young black men nearly every time he's at the gym. And it's summarized this way. Comments about Trump being funny, entertaining, even brave, Buford said, noting that it's not uncommon to hear his peers talking about an unspecified they who are out to get the former president. And here is another set of quotations from this 28-year-old man in Marietta, Georgia, Arthur Buford. Quote, I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of Trump, but I'll definitely take Trump over Harris, end quote, adding that he was impressed by Trump's business experience while suggesting that Harris, a former prosecutor, California attorney general, and senator, wasn't qualified and just seems to have been given everything in her career.
Well, not only that, again, she is a liberal elite. She's a liberal elitist. And how does she connect?
Yeah.
Other than her complexion, she's half Indian, half Jamaican.
Based how on the does racial she, demographics?
Yeah, how does she connect with a working class black man? And the answer is she really doesn't.
Yeah, that would be one of her Achilles heels, is having a tough time connecting with people.
You know, Bill Clinton would connect from his working class background.
Best calling cards, right?
You know, used to be called white trash when he was a kid growing up. You know, hard scrabble family upbringing. He would connect more with the black community, and he was always very popular with the black community because he had rapport. He had empathy. She has neither of those things.
Yeah. The Politico story includes one more conversation with a 25-year-old black voter from Kennesaw, Samuel Kim. He voted for Biden in 2020. He's a recent graduate from Savannah College of Art and Design. This is a pretty high-profile school. Savannah SCAD is what it's called. But he now lives with his family due to the high cost of living. And he's recently changed his mind on immigration issues over the last 4 years. He's going to be voting for Trump, saying, I wouldn't say he's perfect or anything, but he'll get the job done.
I think that's how a lot of people are landing on this. They say, I don't particularly care for the man, but I had a better life when he was president. The economy was better. Our community was a better place without being swarmed over by people in the country illegally. So that's how a lot of people are landing on this. It's not who do I like better. It's just who's going to be a better president, who will do more of the things, have the better policies that make my life better. All right. Speaking of making life better, Steve Moore has been doing that for a lot of people. You see him all the time on Fox News. You're going to hear him once again on The Commute with Carlson right around the corner. I really hope that Steve Moore is not disco dancing to this music, right? Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Moore, you see him all the time on Fox News. He is the author of several books, including a great new book about the Donald Trump economy contrasted with the Biden-Harris economy. It's a great book, lots of charts, graphs, gets right to the point. And, of course, he is the chief economist of the John Carlson Show as well. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Hi, John. And the name of that book is The Trump Economic Miracle. And we're number one on Amazon for business and economics. So I want to keep it rolling. And I want to urge your listeners, because, you know, most people have made up their mind about who they're going to vote for. And by the way, I think you have early voting, right? In
Washington. Ballots are hitting as we speak. Ballots are hitting as we speak. Most people will have their ballots by tomorrow.
Okay. So in some states, they started voting 2 weeks ago, which I think is the most ridiculous thing. But in any case, if you know people who are undecided about who they're going to vote for, or whether neighbors or family members or friends, get them this book, and you can read this in two or three nights, and it does make an overpowering case that virtually every economic measurement, the economy did far, far better under Trump than Biden. I haven't talked in a week or so, and John, there was a big piece in the Wall Street Journal, I think it was on Monday, where 50 leading, quote, leading economists, we don't know who those are, but they're leading economists. I wasn't one of them, by the way, say that Kamala Harris would be better on inflation and deficits than Trump. And I really almost dropped off my chair. I said, well, wait a minute. I mean, this is in our book. The average, do you know what the average inflation rate, John, was when Trump was president for his 4 years?
Oh, I have done my homework here. I believe it was about 7.5%.
Well, that was the cumulative. Mm-hmm. You're exactly right.
You over have 4 years. So over 4 years. It was 1.5% when he left.
Yeah, and the average over the 4 years, you're good at this, John, and the average over those 4 years was 1.95%, which is actually slightly lower than the inflation target that the Federal Reserve Board wants. They want, you know, they want price to rise at a calm 2% per year. And then under Biden-Harris, the average inflation rate over the 3.75 years they've been in office has been 6.5%. So in other words, the math there is easy, that inflation has been more than three times higher under Kamala Harris and Joe Biden than under Trump. So how do you do the math and then say, well, if Trump is reelected, inflation is going to be worse than it was under Biden and Harris, when their inflation rate was three times higher? And same thing with the deficit. We looked at the budget deficit. And by the way, I'm going to say this loud and clear. You've known me a long time, John. I'm not some kind of rah-rah Republican. And I think, you know, pox on both their houses sometimes, especially when it comes to spending money. And neither Trump nor Biden have had a good record on deficits. Neither of them have. And I'm, as a Trump economic advisor, I'll even admit that. But the fact is that if you take out 2020 and 2021, which were aberrations, those were, you know, you shut down the whole economy. Sure. So obviously you had enormous deficits. So take out those 2 years. So that's the last year of Trump and the first year of Biden. The average, these are pretty bad numbers for both of them. $800 billion a year was the average average deficit under Trump. You know what it was under Kamala Harris and Biden?
Yes, I believe it was like $1.4 trillion.
You're off a little bit. It's actually closer to $1.6 trillion.
Wow.
Because we just got the new numbers in last week. So
that is every year they are spending that much more than they're taking in.
Yes, it's unbelievable. Now, $800 billion under Trump, that's a really bad number. But $1.6 trillion, I mean, and these guys are saying, oh, well, it's going to be much better if Kamala Harris is in. Now,
keep in mind, the last time we had 50 experts weigh in during a presidential race, they were telling us that the Hunter Biden laptop was Soviet disinformation, Russian disinformation.
Right. And they were telling us that the Russia collusion story was true. That was what all the experts were saying. Right. Yeah. You just can't. And by the way, also, these are the experts who were when they were asked at the beginning of Biden's presidency, when he was proposing these $5 trillion of massive spending and deficits. They said, don't worry. We don't see that causing inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They got that one right.
You know, this is we've come to learn this, and I've said one of the profound truisms about this country is that the rank and file, everyday ordinary Americans have a handle on things. It's our elites who are going crazy all the time.
It is. And, you know, somebody sent me one of these memes that was just, we actually had it in our hotline. I hope, by the way, people are getting our hotline. It is free, folks. Just go to unleashprosperity.com and get it for free. It goes out to about 100,000 people. But we always put a little cartoon or meme in that. It was really fun. Remember in the old Sesame Street things, they had the kind of professors and they'd beep, 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 and they'd be like running around and bumping into each other.
Oh, yes.
You know, those are the experts we have in Washington.
No, these are the people who they make the case for reducing the role of government in society. Why would you trust these people to run your life?
Yeah, you mean increasing the role of government in our
lives. No, they make the case for why you want to decrease the role of government, because increasing the role of government gives them more power to shape your life.
Yeah. Of course, this is all about money. It is all about what gives them power, and that's what amplifies everything the left does. And along those lines, I'll tell you another, you know, story that just infuriates me just from the news in the last few days. And this was in our hotline, too. You know, all that green, what do they call it? The Green New Deal money, the 300,
right.
I think it was $370 billion. Well, what they've done, and the Democrats are not stupid. I mean, they're pretty smart when it comes to politics. I always say people like you and I do policy, John. They do politics. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say it. They're
no, that's a great point.
And so anyway, so they've got this $370 billion slush fund. And guess where they're spending all that money right now?
Michigan, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Georgia, Wisconsin. Gee, what do all those states have in common? Oh, yeah. You know what we used to call that in the old days, Sean? Graft. When you're trying to buy votes and using the taxpayer money, that's what they're doing with that. It's not about changing the temperature of the planet. It's about buying votes.
Yep. Yeah, it is very cynical, and it just goes to show that's where they're coming. Look, you had Kamala Harris saying that she was going to, because they're worried about the black vote, and she says, we're going to have forgivable $20,000 loans. Yeah, yeah, for black men entrepreneurs.
Up to I thought some of these loans, I thought she said would be, you could get a forgivable loan if you were going to start a business up to $1 million.
Yeah. Just,
I'll have to double check that.
But it is just nuts how that is going. By the way,
how many of those loans do you think are going to actually turn out to be good loans? I mean, it's going to be like the student loan crisis, you know, where we spent. Remember when they started the student? Don't worry, the students all pay their money back, and now we've had to spend $400 billion forgiving those loans. Just think, I mean, why they're creating all these new government programs? They're shoving all the costs in the future. One thing I don't get, Don, is how young people, you know, people in their 20s and 30s, could possibly be in favor of this agenda. Because, you know, you and I are going to be dead by the time all these bills come due.
Because you know, they don't have anything to compare it with.
That's true. Yeah.
Now, speaking of comparisons, real quickly, as you know, the Kamala Harris campaign needs to win the three industrial states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan.
And Michigan.
Okay. In 2016, when it was Hillary versus Trump in Wisconsin on this very day, October 18th, she had a 6.4 point lead in Wisconsin. Biden, 4 years later, had a 6.1 lead. In Wisconsin today, Donald Trump has a 0.1 percentage point lead. In Pennsylvania, again, Hillary had a 6.5 point lead. Biden had a 4.5 point lead. Trump is up by half a point in Pennsylvania. And in Michigan, Hillary, 4 years ago, had a 12-point lead. She ended up losing Michigan. Yep. Biden had a 7-point lead. Trump has a 1-point lead in Michigan. All three of these states are must-win. They got to win. The Democrats have to win all three of these states.
Yeah, and pretty much all Trump has to do is win one of the three. I do think Pennsylvania will be the key state. And, you know, the polls were wrong in the past because Trump in those states outperformed those polls in some cases by 7 or 8 points. But you never know. I mean, every election is different, John. So I don't want to be too euphoric about that.
Right.
I mean, these are still laser close elections and razor close. And so I like to look at the betting markets, and they have shifted. They've shifted over the last 10 days from Kamala being a slight favorite to now Trump is, you know, at 57% chance of winning, which is still pretty close to a coin flip, you know, 57% versus 43%.
Could go either way. But I'm just a little bit of history for people.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be, but, you know, look, I do think having just seen Trump, Kamala in the last week or two, she just doesn't, you know, the Bret Baier thing.
Wasn't she wonderful in Bret Baier? She was just so good, so compelling on Bret Baier. I mean, we were talking about.
Interesting about that interview was it was pretty predictable, very predictable, that one of the questions she was going to be asked is, you know, you had said the other day that you wouldn't change anything that Biden did.
Right.
You know, do you still believe that? Now, that I think everybody knew that question was coming.
Sure.
And she still couldn't answer
it. And she didn't. Yeah.
I mean, we're still waiting for an answer, Kamala. You know, she started by saying I was born in a middle class.
Right. Steve Moore, great having you here. Thanks very much. And again, the Trump Economic Miracle, help keep it a number one bestseller. Go to Amazon. Steve Moore.
And don't forget, she also worked for McDonald's, so she's well qualified.
Well, she might be headed back there after Election Day. It's 48 minutes after 7 o'clock, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right, it is 7 minutes to 8 o'clock, The John Carlson Show. Cheryl Atkinson Host of the national TV news magazine Full Measure. You see it on Como 4, 10 a.m., repeats at 11:30 at night. And she is talking, she is addressing a subject that is very big, which is in Michigan, swing state of Michigan, which is car production and tariffs. Cheryl Atkinson, good morning.
Good morning.
So what you've looked at this issue. Company that has part Chinese ownership planning a massive factory across the border in Mexico. Tell us more.
Well, they're planning a factory in Michigan, not in Mexico. And
this is the one in Michigan. Okay, very good.
Yes, it's creating a huge uproar because they should be happy. It's a region that is very poor. It's going to bring thousands of jobs, but there's Chinese ownership. And what I thought was most fascinating is it's not Republicans versus Democrats. It's all mixed up. It was a full Republican township board that invited them to come in and gave them all these incentives. They were all wiped out in a recall election over this controversy. And it's just mixed between Democrats and Republicans who are on different sides of this whole thing. So fascinating debate. It's actually happening in other places besides Michigan, but this is one center point and also happens to be a swing state and a political discussion. So very interesting.
So and this plant, would these have been, they were going to build electric car batteries?
They're going to build components for electric car batteries. And, you know, it could be something really good for them. But then again, once they found out that there is some Chinese ownership, it's become a question about potential national security threat and all kinds of foreign interference things
has
going
Trump,
on.
Trump and Harris taken a position on the plant?
Well, some say Trump wants it because he invites this kind of development, but some say Trump's against it because he's against the foreign ownership. It sounds like J.D. Vance spoke there and was mostly against it.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
I can't wait to see this. That's going to be Sunday on Full Measure. Como 4, 10 a.m., repeats at 11:30. Thank you, Cheryl, for doing this segment.
Thank you.
And for jumping on with us this morning. Have a great weekend. It is coming up on 8 a.m. headlines. And then hour number 3 of The Commute right in front of us.
Thank God it's Friday.
Mm-hmm. You got that right. Welcome, everyone, to the John Carlson Show. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Appreciate you letting me be part of your listening day. It is 3 minutes after 8 o'clock. And let's start local here. I definitely want to address the huge, huge issue of Israel finally getting, meaning killing, the leader of Hamas and the mastermind of that awful slaughter last October 7th in the city of Rafah, a city that the Biden administration the Biden administration warned them not to go. Remember that? Kamala Harris said she had studied the maps. They warned Israel not to enter Rafah. Well, they threatened consequences if they did. And Israel said, we can't win this war without going into Rafah, and we're not losing this war. So they went into Rafah, and they succeeded masterfully. They evacuated civilians. They were told that couldn't be done. They did it in 2 weeks. And they started decimating the remnant of Hamas fighters. And yesterday, it culminated right about this time, 24 hours ago, in the announcement that they had killed Yahya Sinwar. Didn't even know it was him at first. So, again, this happened. Israel has this huge victory, not because of, but in spite of the Biden-Harris administration. So when it comes to how to secure peace and how to win a war, I trust Israel over the Biden-Harris administration by leaps and bounds. All right. I said I wanted to start local here this hour, so let's turn to local. Brian Haywood. The man behind the four initiatives. We know that the other side is getting worried, getting nervous, maybe even getting desperate because their criticisms are getting more and more heated. The man who is seeing this and is on the receiving end of some of that vehement criticism is Brian Haywood. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good morning. We're surviving and we're still fighting.
Tell me how those gas price rollback events went earlier this week that we talked about on the show.
It was amazing. In Bellingham, we were up right off of Western University's campus.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fantastic. There were lines going out in two directions.
Nice.
And there was lots of college students who wouldn't normally be a target for sort of a common sense message. And we had a lot of great conversations with them. And many of them didn't know about the initiatives. And once we had a chance to explain it to them, we had a lot of support.
Well, I tell you, the one in Everett I heard went pretty well as well. At the Shell station, Jackson's Shell station. And these drive the other side nuts because you're illustrating for rank and file, everyday, ordinary Washington voters and consumers, what's at stake? What changes if Initiative 2117 passes? So good on you. Now,
thank you.
Jay Inslee is getting more and more extreme and vehement. Here is what he said recently in Spokane. He focuses on Brian Haywood. Let's go ahead and start that clip. Young Zach, let's go ahead, re-rack, and start that clip. This is Jay Inslee.
What has Brian Haywood done to protect your health? What has he done to fight climate change? What has he done to get rid of pollution? Not a damn thing. Because frankly, he doesn't care about your health. He doesn't care about forest fires burning down the state. He doesn't care about salmon going extinct. He doesn't care about an epidemic of asthma. He doesn't care. So don't let him criticize this bill, because you know what he's offered? Nothing.
Okay, Brian Haywood, you don't care about children with asthma. You don't care about salmon going extinct. You don't care about wildfires burning down the state of Washington because you disagree with Jay Inslee on the invisible gas tax.
Well, the irony in that statement, here's Jay Inslee, who speaks a good game, but show me evidence that anything that he's done has impacted in a positive way any of those things he just talked about. The state is behind on the culvert program that was supposed to help the salmon. It's way behind, and it's costing the state billions of dollars because of his incompetency. On the forest fires, it's more a forest fire management system, which is right under his administration, which they have completely failed to do. And then if we want to talk about carbon output and carbon emissions, we stopped when he started to run for governor in 2019. We stopped even tracking it because it was getting worse, not better, under his administration.
When you say we, you mean they, the government. The government stopped tracking.
Yep. That's right. The Washington state stop tracking it. So it's no longer on the website, even though they're required to put it on the website. And more ironically, this has been an interesting thing. I debated recently Reuven Carlisle, mm-hmm. and then I got a chance to debate a woman named Shoemake, who's also a legislator.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them claim that the reason, and also Alex Rammel, so another legislator, all three of them claimed the reason that we're not tracking here in Washington state is because of Donald Trump. And I almost didn't control my laughter.
Where did that come from?
From some talking point memo deep in Olympia. They're claiming the reason that Inslee's not tracking is because of something Trump did. You got to be kidding me. Biden's been in office for 4 years.
I swear, if the Seahawks lose on Sunday, Jay Inslee's going to blame Donald Trump.
It was amazing to hear this come out of their mouths. Even better, John, I had this debate I had up in Bellingham with Ms. Shoemake.
Mm-hmm.
She teaches up at Western.
Yes.
And it's been my experience when someone has to declare their credentials 7 or 8 times, it's because they're not very good at whatever they're declaring the credentials are. She said, well, I'm an economics professor at Western. I teach classes about economics in Western. And as we were debating, one of the points that she made that she thought was really strong was, well, Mr. Haywood probably needs to take one of my classes at Western on economics if he doesn't understand that.
Oh, please.
I was listening to her, and I didn't say anything rude back, but I really despaired for the knowledge that's being passed on to students if she's the one that's passing it on.
By the way, interesting. I would turn to her and say, I think I know a little something about economics. I built a company. Have you? No, you talk about people who build companies. So maybe you're the one who needs to listen. But I'm not as nice as you, Brian. Okay.
Oh man.
No, Sharon Shoemake. Whenever you hear someone who is an academic repeatedly refer to themselves as an academic, that is a sign that they are, first of all, needy. They're needy, and secondly, that they are very thin on actual credentials. The fact is, Initiative 2117 cannot be justified on the grounds that it is worth this massive increase in the price of gasoline because we are reducing our carbon footprint by so much. They know we're not, and that is why they've killed the data. In fact, that's why they're no longer even tracking the data, because they know it's not going to show measurable results. 2117 is really just a massive scheme to redistribute wealth from working class folks filling their gas tanks to politically connected green businesses and local governments. That's all this is a way of extracting more money from working class people's pockets while you are simultaneously bemoaning the fact that we have such a regressive tax system in Washington, Brian.
And then, well, that's the other piece, right? They keep saying, oh, we're so regressive. We got to have this capital gains tax. It's the only way to balance things. But if they really were concerned about a regressive tax, they would get rid of the sales tax. They would reduce the gas tax, and they would get rid of this hidden gas tax. And if they were doing something like that and raising taxes, I still wouldn't like it because I think they have plenty of money in the budget. But at least they would have a leg to stand on when they start claiming we need an income tax or a capital gains tax.
Well, and it's always we need a new tax and people need less freedom. And we need. So, again, the one thing we want to emphasize, and I did it earlier this morning, I'm going to do it again right now, and I'm going to do it every day for the rest of this election. If you want to do away with the capital gains tax, with the invisible gas tax, the ban on natural gas, the mandatory long-term care tax, if you want to do away with all those mandates, then you vote yes. You vote yes to pay less. Vote yes, pay less. Because I've talked to a lot of people who say, oh, don't worry, John. I think that gas tax is terrible. I'm voting no. I said, wait. You want to stop it, then you vote yes. You vote yes on the initiative to do away with all the bad stuff.
Yep. Vote yes to pay less. Vote yes to pay less.
So people want to know, because I think that the one sign of hope that we can see real positive change in a conservative direction, the one sign of hope at this point in the election is those four initiatives, Brian. What can people do at this point?
There's a couple of really important things they can do. So they can go on our website and look at the volunteers page. We have people out knocking on doors, talking to neighbors, and that's something you can do really easy in your own neighborhood. You can call us and volunteer, or you can just do it on your own in a very free country fashion. You can just go out and talk to people. And if you don't feel confident that you know enough, you can get informed, and that might be the first thing. Go on our website. Right on the front page, we have about 6 to 8 minute long videos.
They're quite
that
good.
You can watch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one for each initiative. And it'll give you the sort of the history, how the former law came to be and what the promise was and what the results are now and why people should vote yes to get rid of that law. Vote yes, pay less.
By the way, I really want to credit you doing something I've not seen a campaign do before, not a leading campaign do before, and that is you guys actually took the time to research not just your position, but the issue itself, the history, the legislative history, and then explain why this initiative was necessary in each and every one of these video vignettes. And I have not seen a newspaper delve into the details as well and as fairly as you have. Even though you're on one side of the issue, these video vignettes, you could see them. Just go to letsgowa.com, or if you want, letsgowashington.com. But letsgowa.com, and you can see Haley doing this these wonderful vignettes. She does a good job too, Brian.
She's every inch as good as McInerney was.
Yes, much more than McLemore. Much more than, yes, much
no, no,
more.
No, McInerney, the McInerney, the former press secretary for President Trump.
Oh, yes, Kayleigh McInerney, yes.
Kayleigh. We got Hallie, they had Kayleigh. Hallie, I think it's better.
No, she is. And these video essays, they're short, compact, but they're very informative. And if you just want to learn more about these issues, you know, check them out. Also, again, there's going to be call centers. There's going to be volunteer events. You can door drop literature. Just go to hit the volunteer tab up top when you go to letsgowashington.com. If these initiatives win, and it's going to be close, the other side's throwing everything they have into them. But again, if these initiatives prevail, then not only does policy change in Washington, not only is Jay Inslee's legacy wrecked before he even walks out the door, which is poetic justice, but it changes politics in Washington. Now in Olympia, the one-party rulers can no longer look over at the Republicans and smirk at them and say, what can you do? Because now they know that they are not the final word. The people are the final word, courtesy of Let's Go Washington and Brian. Brian, the final word. Go ahead.
Well, these laws actually go into effect in December. So if you're out there, thinking, how can I do something that impacts it this year? One other thing you can do is go and get all of our ads or get any of those videos and email them. You can do this sitting at home in your pajamas. Email our videos out to everybody, all your friends. Make them go viral and vote yes, pay less.
Wonderful. Vote yes, pay less. Say it to all your friends every day between now and Election Day on these initiatives. Vote yes on all of them. Vote yes, pay less. Brian Haywood, have a great weekend. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks, sir.
You got it. It is 21 minutes after 8 o'clock. Philip J. Vandenberg III's favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists, as the commute with Carlson continues. Good morning. All right. Vote yes, pay less. The commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 26 minutes after 8. All right, Phil, you've been waiting all morning long for social media from socialists.
Yeah, this is a combination of the internet never forgets and the game that gets played on social media of this tweet or this post or this message did not age well. And this revolves around a story you've been talking about all morning. This is the Israeli Defense Forces confirming that they have killed the head of Hamas, Yahya Sinwar. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And we're going to talk about Kamala Harris's previous comments about being a bad idea to go into Rafah, which is the location where this Hamas leader was ultimately met his demise. And Tom Cotton, the U.S. senator from Arkansas, Republican, posted, Hamas's genocidal leader Yahya Sinwar was killed in Rafah. Remember, it was Kamala Harris that said she had studied the maps and demanded that Israel not enter Rafah. And this was back in March. And somebody else added in the ABC News interview with Vice President Harris from back in March. Here's what was said.
Conversations and in every way that any major military operation in Rafah would be a huge mistake. Let me tell you something. I have studied the maps. There's nowhere for those folks to go. And we're looking at about 1.5 million people in Rafah who are there because they were told to go there, most of them.
Okay. So how does this play into Yahya Sinwar's ultimate culpability in all of this? If he's in Rafah where whoever it is has told people to go to Rafah, what is Hamas's culpability in any of this?
First of all, 1.5 million civilians, they have nowhere to go. They were evacuated in 2 weeks' time. by the Israeli Defense Forces. Okay, so first of all, there was a place for them to go. Secondly, yeah, you're absolutely right. It would be a huge mistake, she said, if they went into Rafah. Are you kidding? That's why they're winning the war, is because they went into Rafah, because they disregarded what Kamala Harris said, even though she studied the maps.
Yeah. Nina Turner on social media is a former Ohio State senator. She tried to run for Congress. She didn't succeed in running for Congress. She's been a national surrogate for Bernie Sanders' 2016 campaign and a national co-chair for his 2020 campaign.
Right.
And she's a reliable socialist on social media. She posted the following. The term unskilled labor is used to justify paying people poverty wages. And I thought when I read that, you know, the engineers who re-landed that SpaceX rocket on the launch pad earlier this week, those engineers and I had a good laugh at this post. And somebody else actually brought up something even more specific to Nina Turner, who, as I indicated, ran for Congress but did not succeed in a run for the United States Congress. And they screenshotted a August 2022 post by Nina Turner that said $25 hour minimum wage. And then they added a screenshot that says canvasser for congressional campaign. And the screenshot says Nina Turner for Congress, Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
Full-time, part-time canvassing job opportunities that pay $15 an hour. And this person wrote, you always seem to be in favor of higher wages until you have to pay those wages.
Until you have to pay them.
That's game, good. Set, match point.
Good catch. Good catch. You are listening to The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We have some of those more highlights from the Al Smith dinner that Kamala Harris boycotted. Well, I won't say she boycotted. She chose not to attend it and then sent a video that did not go over well. Anyway, we have that and a lot more coming your way as the commute continues. It's 8:30. Ever since 1960, the Al Smith dinner, which is held annually, it's white tie and tails, Waldorf Astoria, you know, formal gathering, dinner gathering. They raise millions of dollars for children's charities, and it's the Catholic Church at its best, and also dressed up in not just their Sunday best, but their formal evening best. Okay, so they get about over 1,000 people attend this dinner, and during the presidential election season, they have the candidates running, again, starting in 1960, Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy showed up, and it's pretty much been that way. Until this year, Kamala Harris announced that she would not attend, and that instead it was arranged that she would produce a video and send in a video. Now, here's what's weird about this is this wasn't, you know, some last minute thing. Last month, they had said that they were not going to attend the Al Smith dinner. And so last night they held the dinner. Donald Trump was there. The governor of New York was there. The mayor of New York was there. Senator Chuck Schumer was there. In fact, he was sitting right next to the podium. And the MC was Jim Gaffigan, who's a stand-up comedian. He's on Saturday Night Live. He plays Tim Walz, Governor Walz, on Saturday Night Live. And he couldn't help but make note of the fact that Kamala Harris wasn't there.
You know, this event has been referred to as the Catholic Met Gala. 22% of Americans identify as Catholic. Catholics will be a key demographic in every battleground state. I'm sorry, why is Vice President Harris not here? I mean, consider this. This is a room full of Catholics and Jews in New York City. This is a layup for the Democratic nominee.
It is. It is. So she wasn't there. She sent a video. I closed my eyes and listened, you know, to the video. This is what you do when there's a video and you wonder, will it play on radio or not? you close your eyes and you play it, and, you know, how does it sound? The video, which included having the former Saturday Night Live comedian Molly Shannon playing one of the characters, what was it, Phil, back in the 80s? Maybe the 90s?
Yeah, probably 90s.
Mary Catherine Gallagher
right.
played the yeah. uptight Catholic schoolgirl.
Yeah, wearing the Catholic school uniform.
Prancing around in the background and interrupting Kamala Harris, it didn't work. The crowd watched and in silence, which is the worst reaction of all. You're better off getting groans and guffaws and everything than just complete silence. But anyway, that didn't work. Donald Trump was given the chance to speak. He was there live. And this is part of what Donald Trump had to say at the dinner last night.
All polls are indicating I'm leading big with the Catholic vote, as I should be. But I don't think Kamala has given up yet. She hasn't. Instead of attending tonight, she's in Michigan receiving communion from Gretchen Whitmer.
That was a great shot, because we talked about this scandal where she went on the podcast of a radical feminist, Gretchen Whitmer, and the podcast host got down on her knees and knelt down and stuck her tongue out like she was at communion. And the governor of Michigan gave her a Dorito and placed it on her. I mean, it was really offensive. And the governor ended up apologizing for doing it. But again, it was also just weird. Just weird. Anyway.
That's not a pretty sight. But Catholics, please don't be too insulted by Kamala's absence. If the Democrats, he says, thank you very much, I appreciate it. If Democrats really wanted to have someone not be with us this evening, they would have just sent Joe Biden.
Please tell me you have his white dudes for Harris clip.
Oh, we do. You're about to hear it. Again, this is Trump last night, the Al Smith dinner, where they're supposed to poke a little bit of fun at themselves, poke a little bit of fun at their opponents, but, you know, keep it light. Keep it light.
There's a group called White Dudes for Harris. Have you seen this? White Dudes for Harris. Anybody know? Are some of you here? White Dudes for Harris. Doesn't sound like it. But I'm not worried about them at all, because their wives and their wives' lovers are all voting for me.
Oh, man. Okay. And then finally, Tim Walz, the hapless running mate for Kamala Harris, in an effort to show progressives that he was with it, he ordered all public school bathrooms in high school, middle school, and elementary school to stock tampons in the girls' and the boys' restrooms. So second and third grade boys now use the bathroom where you can get a tampon. They put a tampon dispenser in elementary school boys' and girls' bathrooms.
I used to think the Democrats were crazy for saying that men have periods, but then I met Tim Walz.
it's not bad. Anyway, that's the Al Smith dinner. If you want to see, if you Google Al Smith dinner, there are a lot of funny things.
Boom. Roasted.
That happened. And I got to play this. I got to play this one more time here. Maria Cantwell went out with Pramila Jayapal to rally and support the striking Boeing machinists. So she goes out there, Maria Cantwell does, and everything was working okay for her. I mean, they weren't reacting much. You know, Maria has always been a little bit dry on the speaking stump. And then Maria, in front of what she assumed were a bunch of union Democrats, criticized Donald Trump. Listen to what happened after she does, and then listen to the crowd reaction after that.
Our Puget Sound economy depends on it. But I just want to warn these guys of something. Housing everywhere in the United States of America is expensive as all get out. We haven't built enough supply. I was in a key negotiation 5 years ago to get a bipartisan bill that would have built hundreds of thousands, up to a million units by now. But Donald Trump came in and squashed that deal.
Now, listen.
So even here...
Listen.
Even here, build housing. My point is this, everywhere in America, we need more affordable housing.
the point I was trying to make is this, that's when you know someone's in a little bit of trouble. That's when you know that a politician has stepped in it. That's when Maria Cantwell, that's when Maria Cantwell realized, oh, this is a blue-collar union. This is a private sector union. They're not quite with the Democratic Party platform across the board.
Congratulations, you played yourself.
All you had to do, Maria, was look at the bumper stickers on the cars in the parking lot, and it would have become very clear for you. A lot of those machinists on board with Donald Trump. When we come back, interesting weekend in sports. Straight ahead, we better check in with our senior sports correspondent as the commute continues. Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 52 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. The commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right. Well, Philip J. Vandervoort III, I promised people that we're going to do a quick review in sports. All we need now is a senior sports correspondent to join us.
Waiting for that cell phone call to go through.
While we are waiting for him, I've noticed something. There's a poll out in the governor's race. In fact, there's a couple of polls out. And they show Ferguson ahead and Reichert, climbing. But there's a statistic here that caught my attention that is very worrisome. 89% of Washington voters who call themselves Democrats are going to vote for Ferguson. This is in the Seattle Times poll conducted by Survey USA. Okay, 89% of Democrats voting for Ferguson. Only 82% of Republicans say they're voting for Reichert. And I'm going, what?
What's the sample size in this? Are we up to 500 people?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, okay.
And
because that's kind of right at the border of what makes for a reasonable survey.
A reasonable poll. But here's the kicker. Here's the reason for that. 6% of the voters, Democrat voters, are undecided. 6% of Democrat voters are undecided. 12% of Republican voters say they're undecided on voting for Reichert or not. What? Yeah, why would you be undecided?
Seeing some of this Reichert-Ferguson stuff, it makes me wonder, how awful does this state have to get before voters decide we're not returning another Democrat to the governor's mansion in Olympia?
Even because if you all rode in semi-bird, you have no chance.
Because Ferguson's going to be Jay Inslee part two, but probably worse.
Yeah, I mean, I understand.
So how bad does it have to get?
Because I was thinking, are these just embittered semi-bird supporters or not? And you would say, well, if they are, why would, I understand why they supported semi-bird. I don't know why they would now be supporting Bob Ferguson.
Or deciding to not participate and not vote. Where are these Boeing machinists that were booing Maria Cantwell? Are they going to be voting for Bob Ferguson? Because you should be booing yourself if you're booing Maria Cantwell for her comments and then deciding, oh, yeah, I'm voting for Ferguson this time around instead of Reichert. You're just going to get more of what you asked for.
Yes, yes. By the way, real quickly, Washington State up against Hawaii tomorrow. That's going to be 12:35 Saturday game, of course. And the Seahawks, they play the Atlanta Falcons in Atlanta. 10 a.m. start on that game. You don't want to miss. Have a great weekend, and let's talk again on Monday. You know we're going to have a lot to talk about.